Next on BYUSN with spring football in the books, how are we feeling about Kalani Sitake's Cougars now compared to the start of spring ball? Linebacker Kate Uluave makes his show debut as he details why he chose to come to Provo and what are his expectations for this year.
BYU TV basketball analyst Jonathan Tavenari joins the show ahead of the transfer portal opening tomorrow. Which positions does BYU need to address? We'll ask him, and we'll recap a weekend whip-around of topics, including AJ bringing home some hardware and Jane setting another NCAA record.
Jane Hedengren is the truth. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter. BYU fans everywhere. It is Monday, April 6th. They date significant in church history. I'm Jerem Jordan. His fellow BYU alum, Dave McCann.
It was a big weekend for the alums. The alumni game was back in action Friday night at Lavelle Edwards Stadium. I described it in the Deseret News as a magical night, right? It's the last football event before the next one, which is September 5th against Utah Tech. Norm Chow was back.
That was awesome.
John Walsh was back in the stadium for the first time since 94. Talked with those guys on the sideline. He's just beaming with joy. And that's part of what makes this event great, is the joy these guys feel of being back together. This brotherhood that Kalani is trying to sew together is his masterpiece, and it works.
It's special to be in the stadium anytime you can. I love being in Lavelle Edwards Stadium. It's like, you know, less than 10 times a year for the home games and some practices and the alumni game and Stadium of Fire and so on and so forth. So every time we can be there, it's great. There were so many great plays in this. We're going to show you that coming up later in the show. I thought we had more great plays than we had in the previous four games. So I really enjoyed it. It was super fun. It came down to the wire like it always does, Dave.
Always seems to.
It came down literally to the last play. We'll show you that play coming up in a little bit. All rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
What did we learn about BYU football this spring?
Bear Bachmeyer continues to get better.
But Isaiah said, his words, I expect to be a monster.
Cade Uluave is the real deal. There's an exciting freshman class.
So I feel very good about some of those key positions being filled.
Did we need spring ball to learn those things? We did. What's Trending is presented by Tim Daly Nissan, part of the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968. So spring football practice wrap Thursday. Interviews and conversations happened Friday in Lavelle Edwards Stadium prior to the alumni game. You'll see some of those today, some throughout the next week or two. And here we go. BYU football's long summer of waiting begins. How are you feeling about BYU football after spring practices compared to how you felt when it began?
Yeah, I thought spring drills were very business-like, but big business-like. We've been to spring drills where hope is the, I hope this comes together.
Hope's not a play.
Hope this or that. But there have been years when hope was all they had, right? Well, this is a group that is a contender in the Big 12. They act like it. They look like it. They're preparing for it. A number of areas of concern they feel like they're comfortable with. The receivers was the most noticeable one going into camp. And they feel pretty good about that with JoJo Phillips and Kyler Kasper, the transfer from Oregon. He had a good camp. So there's not the, maybe we can find one more guy. Maybe they are, but there isn't that overall feel. And then, of course, the tight ends factor into the guys catching the ball, and they're really excited about that. And so the biggest concern is who's going to catch it. I don't know if that's a giant concern today.
Yeah, I'm excited about seeing this. And there wasn't these sort of, we don't know. It was like, no, we feel like we have a group that will produce. Who exactly will do what? We don't know. We don't know among receivers. I think we know the tight ends are going to be a big deal, though. Mm-hmm. I think Walker Lyons and Roger Saliapaga coming in from Oregon, and USC, reversed that respectively, is important. I think they're going to be two of the best players on the team. And, in fact, Aaron Roderick was asked in a Zoom on Thursday from the media about them and was actually surprised it took so long to talk about them.
Well, I can't believe we've talked this long and nobody asked about those guys yet, because that's two of the best players on our team, and they've shown it this spring. These guys are good ball players. They're going to be a big part of our offense.
So that comment confirms what we hoped, which was, okay, they bring in these two guys. Saliapaga, largely unproven, did have a touchdown in the college football playoff, by the way. Granted, Indiana was up by a million, but he caught a touchdown pass, and when he did, I was like, oh, I know BYU's in the mix for this guy. Hopefully he gets him. Went to Orem High. Shout out to the Tigers. You are an alum. So are a bunch of my uncles. Shout out to them.
Good for them.
So then you bring in, obviously, Walker is a guy that BYU wanted several years ago, the famous recruiting post with the Cougar up in the mountains and the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Ryder on a mission. That's great. So those two will factor in. The question is, Dave, do we feel like those two tight ends are going to be in the top four in receiving yards this year? I would think so at this point, right?
They could be. We've had some pretty good tag teams over the years. I go back to Atula Mealy and Chad Lewis as two who played at the same time.
We're going there
both
now with those
big
two?
Numbers. Well, here are these two guys of comparable size, and that really depend on is their role going to be as important in the offense as it was for Lewis and Mealy and some of the other guys that were together. We'll see. But the option is there where it hasn't been.
Yeah. And to have two of them.
Yeah.
As opposed to Carson Ryan, who was great.
Right.
It's kind of his show. Kian Need would come in. He didn't catch a ball. He's a blocker. He comes in and blocks. I think BYU will be versatile. And Aaron Roderick loves that. Can I put a guy in that you don't know whether I'm running or passing on? Mm-hmm. It's not super obvious. When Kian Need comes in, most of the time it's a run. It's pretty predictable. Granted, if it's third and one, you're going to probably be running anyway. But I'm excited about those two. I'm like you. I like the wide receivers. I'm excited about the young guys too, especially Ledge and Glasker. At linebacker, I was encouraged by the conversation we were hearing about and seeing about Jake Clifton, the K-State transfer back from a mission, that he is a guy who's going to play and off a mission is doing great. And so I'm excited, man. And obviously there are question marks, but what does spring do when the coaches tell us and we get to go and watch and we see that certain guys are playing well? That is encouraging because there's a lot of big names in spring that don't play. That's just how this works. Isaiah Glasser getting healthy. LJ Martin getting healthy. A bunch of it. Nusi Tomoipaile.
Some linemen.
Bunch of guys. And it's not just, and I mentioned this last week, it's not BYU saying out loud, we need to do this, we're going to do this. There's a certain maturity about this group that they don't have to say it. We just all understand what the goal is. It's compete for a Big 12 title. It's get to the college football playoff.
And the underlying theme, and I talked to a bunch of guys about it, it's Texas Tech. It's chasing Texas Tech.
King of the Mountain.
The team they want to beat next year the most isn't on the schedule. It's Texas Tech in the Big 12 Championship. They're the standard. They set it last year. They beat BYU twice. They showed BYU where they got to go get better to contend with them. So they went and loaded up in some of those areas, and then we get to see. Now, they got to work hard just to get the chance of that happening, but that's the goal. That's a different goal than in years past.
Last year it was, okay, now we need to get to Arlington, and BYU did. And now it's you need to get to and win. And if you don't, if you're in position to get into the playoff, and you're in because you probably need to beat Notre Dame in the regular season to be in that position, I don't imagine many scenarios, realistically, where BYU has a regular season, Dave, where they're uber successful, don't beat Notre Dame, and get into the college football playoff. I think that game is one of the biggest games in BYU history because of Big 12, because of last 2 years, because of the drama around Notre Dame, not only with Pop-Tart, but not coming to Provo, after the twofer in the mid-2010s. Now you get the chance, and BYU has never been more prepared to face Notre Dame than a team like this coming off these 2 years. So I'm stoked about that particular game, but there's so much to do before then. I'm happy for the guys that they get some time off here, finish spring winter semester, and then they'll hit it hard in the summer, and then in August, before you know it, we'll be talking about fall
games. Think about those last five games they lost their first year of the Big 12 to where this program is today. Coming out of spring practice, and you can't help but feel like, one, optimistic, two, you can get to Arlington, and three, you've got depth you've never seen before.
LJ Martin's back, you have to use that. It can't be a 10-2, didn't make the playoff, win a bowl game, 11-2.
Like, that's
Big 12. That's a really good year, don't get me wrong. The next step, you got to go up. You got to either win the Big 12 and or make the playoff. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Our question of the day is this: how are you feeling about BYU football after spring practice compared to how you felt before spring at KDG30. The same, I expect anywhere from 10-2 to 12-0. Is 10-2 the minimum threshold of success for this team, Dave?
It feels like it.
Like if they go 9-3, that's not good
enough. With seven home games, you defend your home turf, which is still going to take a lot of work.
Yep.
But it feels like if you can do that, you can do – why can't you do the rest? And you 10-2 after a 12-2 year – it feels like that's the standard.
9-3, given the last 2 years and where this program is, would feel like a disappointment. That's where the highest standard is. But BYU has had a hard time historically responding to high expectations, meeting or exceeding. The graduation to that level needs to occur this year. At 2-6 schemo, Bring back the public spring game, and maybe I can answer this question. You think bringing back the spring game, they're going to, like, show everything and confirm? And
it's never going
to
happen.
The last thing they want is to show their cards in spring, right? Do you want a spring game to come back, though?
I think I'd like the alumni game with more big-name alumni in it. And that played out to be bigger because that's fun. Yeah. I don't need a spring game. You know,
what
you need
is a
healthy team on September 5th.
What if it's the final practice publicly?
Just open it up.
Because we had that a couple years ago. I thought that was cool.
Come to practice. That's different. Yeah. All right, Clyde Livingston. Did I miss it? I guess I was too distracted by women's basketball and a cruel April Fool's joke. Clyde, thanks for watching.
I was walking around Macy's in Spanish Fork Saturday, and I had multiple people come up and talk to me about the April Fool's joke.
Did they,
you guys good.
They fall for it?
We got you good, man. Okay, continue to weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
Transfer portal opens tomorrow for college basketball. What are you expecting BYU to do, and do you think it'll come right away?
Okay, first off, there's this conversation of it's not just the athletes saying, I'm out. It's also BYU saying, hey, you're probably done here.
Yeah.
So there's the give and the take of that. I do expect in the next kind of week or two that we'll probably have half the roster turned over. So five players are already bouncing from, you know, Saunders, Boskovich, Kata, and McGregor are seniors. DeBonta's not coming back, despite our April Fool's joke. That's five of the 17. I expect that to get to at least eight or nine. So only three or four other guys choosing to leave or BYU saying, hey, this isn't going to work out. So I don't think that's a stretch. It could be more than that, but that's my expectation.
The ability to put a puzzle back together is exciting. It livens up the whole summer. And it changes the game. It certainly changed the game for college basketball. So I think these next few weeks are going to be fascinating. There'll be some surprises. I think there'll be some head scratchers. Don't know what number one's going to do. He has said, hey, I'm coming back if I'm not going to be playing professionally. They are professionals, right? So I don't even know what that means. They're making money playing. But obviously NBA or Europe or whatever. But I think it starts right there. Because if that guy's out, then you need size, you need a replacement for that guy, and for crying out loud, you need some shooters.
If I'm Rob Wright III, I come back to BYU because I'm making more than I would in Europe or in the G League. Yeah. Right now, NBA is not a thing for Rob quite yet. We'll see. Is size the issue for Rob with the NBA? Like, he's a tremendous college point guard. Hopefully, he gets an opportunity in the future. That's for later. But yeah, I would guess that, you know, on the roster, there's certain guys that didn't play that we expect back, like Nate Pickens and Dawson Baker weren't honored on senior night. That would preclude that they want to return to BYU. Is Alexei Kostic going to build on what he had here? Brody Kozlowski, we've seen him play 8 games 2 years ago, injured. Would love to see what he can do. You love the upward trajectory of Hadeem Boop. And then there's a lot of kind of TBD on this squad. So I'm interested to see what happens. We know that BYU needs to get a scoring big. We know that Kevin Young values shooters that he called the Holy Grail. How many of those do they need? We'll talk to Jonathan Tavernari about that coming up. But it's certainly interesting. You like the three incoming guys, the Burger Boy, and then you have Dean Rickard out of Tempe, a 6'8 slasher, and then Brooks Barr off a mission, a lefty point guard. So I'm excited to see the new construction of the roster. It's still crazy to me that anybody can just bounce every year. It's somewhat chaotic, but
there's going to be so many names.
That's
in that
Justin
team.
Young and Kevin Young and the whole staff's job to figure this out.
Thankful for the portal because it changes this show for the next 6 weeks.
Yes, it does. We're here regardless. We would like compelling and rich content. Okay, right. Next up.
President Trump signed an executive order on Friday to, in his words, save college sports. The order focused on a 5-year eligibility window, transferring once without penalty before graduation, among other things, goes into effect August 1st. This is what Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark said about it. All the commissioners from the leagues chimed in. Federal action is essential to protect the future of college athletics. And on behalf of the Big 12, we appreciate President Trump's commitment to advancing a solution to build on this momentum and provide long-term clarity and stability. Congress must now act. That's a big part. The Bipartisan SCORE Act offers a comprehensive framework for many of the issues facing our industry. I look forward to continuing working with President Trump and Congress to enact meaningful reforms. I think the key line in here is President Trump's commitment to advancing a solution. everybody for years has been crying, hey, there's a problem here, someone should do something, and nobody does anything. Mm-hmm. So this does something. If not, at least push it into the hands of Congress where they can make something permanent. But every conference commissioner is crying foul, or at least crying, we have no control over anything anymore. Give us some control back.
Yep. Hopefully this will change something. This particular executive order, probably not. Mitt Winter, the lawyer on Twitter, if you read the new college sports executive order closely, you'll see qualifying language that essentially makes it a nothing burger. For example, it directs the NCAA to create new rules as permitted by law and applicable court orders. The law and applicable court orders are what dictates things right now. So it'd be nice if Congress would, you know, lay down the law and then, all right, this is how we proceed. Yes, lawsuits will still occur, but like precedent-setting stuff has happened from Congress, and then we can proceed from there. It doesn't feel like this is completely sustainable, just how chaotic and sort of almost anything goes.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, that doesn't function in any society, modern or ancient. You have to have order. You have to have rule of law. We've got to figure out what that is exactly and go from there.
If there is going to be federal oversight into a sub-professional league, which is college sports, then this is how that process starts. It doesn't start, you know, you're standing on the beach and you see a shark and everyone goes, hey, there's a shark. Someone should do something. And nobody does, then nothing ever gets done, and then people just argue all the time. So if it ever is to move to a spot where the NCAA actually gets some authority back and snaps their losing streak in the courts, and college presidents, a lot of college presidents have come out in support of this because it's something as opposed to somebody should do something about it.
And it applies August 1st, so it won't affect anything relative to now.
It's a free-for-all.
And even
tomorrow.
Then, like it says, I don't know that it actually does much. Congress has got to do this. Okay, ESPN's report on the executive order. Multiple lawyers who work with the colleges and their athletes told ESPN they believe that judges would rule the president's order to be unconstitutional and unenforceable if challenged in court. So this was just the president saying, hey, I'm trying to do something. Is it actually executable? Sounds like
I think you're marketing it. It's advancing. It's advancing this issue.
Puts pressure on Congress.
To eventually get it in the hands of the actual lawmakers.
Yeah. We got to do something because this isn't sustainable. It's chaotic. Okay, it's time to pick up the tempo as we get into the hurry up trill.
Jane Hedegren set another NCAA record. It's what she does this time in the 10K with a 30.46.80, nearly 4 seconds faster than the previous record. Is she the best freshman athlete in BYU history?
Dave, she might be the best athlete in BYU history, period. She's pacing that way. I think she has an argument now to be that. You talk about the greatest who have ever walked through BYU. I think when Jane's done, we will say she is the greatest athlete that has ever come to BYU. You may not be a big track fan. That has nothing to do with it. Is she great at her sport? The answer is she's something above that. She is elite. Not only was that time the BYU and NCAA record, it was the seventh fastest 10K by a USA woman ever. We're going to see her in LA 28 in the Olympics representing the U.S. She is special. She is one of our own from Provo.
That's right.
Tempe High, BYU. Dad teaches at BYU. Brother's on the a distance runner from BYU. She's awesome, man. She is unbelievable.
Cross country, outdoor, indoor, it doesn't matter. When she runs, she wins. And on the rare occasion she doesn't win, she takes second.
Yep.
Against a senior who's leaving, and then she's got 3 more years of not running against that person. She's fascinating. Every time she puts her shoes on, something cool happens.
What does she need to do for us to be like, she's the best athlete ever at BYU? How many national championships does it require?
I don't know.
How many records does
Hindsight's
it require?
Hindsight's going to give us that
Because I would argue right now, you could say she is one of, if not the best, BYU athlete of all time already. Jeffrey has finished her freshman year. We still have outdoor season to finish.
I know.
AJ DeBonta, speaking of greatness, named the Julius Erving Small Forward of the Year over the weekend. Got this picture with Dr. J. Pretty awesome. What does this award mean for AJ and BYU?
It means that Dr. J has a BYU jersey signed by AJ DeBonta.
That's pretty awesome.
That's what that means. And that AJ has a picture with Dr. J. That's just a great moment. There's so many moments in this young kid's life, and there are many more to come. Sets him up. He gets that award. John R. Wooden Awards announced Friday. He's in the mix for that in L.A. And then whatever happens next for him. But every time he posts something, there's something cool about it. Like, hey, here I am with Dr. J. Here I am with such and such. Here I am with LeBron or whatever. It's just he's in an amazing basketball world. And whether he goes pro or not, we expect him to right away. But if he doesn't, great. It'd be awesome.
If he doesn't, we're still putting that out there?
Whatever it is going to be, we're always going to be grateful we had what we had with him, even if it's just 5 months.
Yeah.
Because he's phenomenal. He's going to be spectacular.
Yeah. What it means, street cred. That's what it means.
Arizona got blown out by Michigan in the Final Four on Saturday. Lost by 18, trailed by as many as 30. How bad of a loss was this for the Big 12?
I do think there's an issue with Big 12 at the top, like Arizona getting blown out in the Final Four, Texas Tech getting destroyed by Oregon in the college football playoff. I don't think this is a good look for the league, obviously. The league, we need to compete better at that level. That was tough.
On that day, Michigan was so much better than Arizona. On other days, Arizona probably be better than Michigan. They just caught them at the right time and pounded them.
I don't know, man. I think Michigan's pretty special. I think Michigan's going to win by a bunch tonight. Although, UConn and Michigan, who wins tonight?
I think Michigan, they're on a march. They're mowing down everybody. Question will be the health of their big guy. He's not on the injured list. We expect him to be going tonight. They're good.
You're talking Neaxel Lindeborg with the knee?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've been playing him at the three sometimes. That guy's probably a top five pick as well. He's really good. Give me Michigan. Although, I would love UConn because if UConn wins, we can go, hey, BYU played them tough in November fully healthy in Boston. Moral victories.
How about let's just hope for a game after those two we saw on Saturday.
Entertain us.
Baseball and softball are back in action tomorrow. Softball is home against Utah Valley. Baseball is way on the road over in Orem against the Wolverines. Coverage of both games starts at 8 Eastern on ESPN+. Baseball's also on BYU Radio.
University Parkway collision, if you will.
Stop by In-N-Out on the way. Or away
nice.
Home.
Up next, I go one-on-one with BYU linebacker Cade Uluwave about why he chose to transfer to BYU, his expectations for the season, and how long has he been a fan of this program? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the Tim Daly Auto Group, serving Utah since 1968.
Perhaps the best signing in the portal era BYU has ever made. Cade Uluwave from Cal.
He has the size, he has the speed, and first team all ACC.
Yeah, really excited to see what he's going to do in games in the Big 12.
Didn't have that club on when I talked to him on Friday. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. Jerem Jordan alongside Dave McCann. And perhaps the most accomplished transfer in BYU history is Cade Uluwave, a first team all Power 4 conference linebacker in the ACC last year with 100 tackles at Cal. And perhaps he's going to have another great season at BYU. We sure hope so. I spoke with Cade at LaBelle Edwards Stadium Friday afternoon. Cade, welcome to BYU and BYU Sports Nation, man. It's great to have you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we were talking before this that when you were younger, you'd actually turn on the show.
Dude, every day. Every day I'd go on my TV, I'd flip to BYU TV and watch BYU Sports Nation. So I knew everything about everyone at the time. So to be part of the show now, I'm hyped. I'm juiced.
We're so excited. And I feel super old, but that's neither here nor there. So what was the offseason like as you made the decision to come back to Utah and play BYU?
Yeah. Like you said, it was a long decision, and it really was something that I had to think about a lot. But you know, ultimately, you know, after a lot of prayer and thought, you know, I thought, you know, there's no better place to come back home and play for BYU for my last year. And so just couldn't be more excited, really. And you know, as the offseason went on, just, you know, my excitement has grown even more to, you know, to start the season and whatnot. So just counting down the days and, you know, continue to keep growing and building and just, you know, learning and along the way. But I'm just super excited.
It's hard to summarize 3 years in like 30 seconds or something, but how would you summarize what you learned and gained as a person and player at Cal?
Yeah, Cal really changed me a lot of ways, and I'm super grateful for them and everything they did for me. And so, you know, I always credit Cal for, you know, making me who I am today. I think BYU and Cal can't be more opposite, you know, it's great and I love it. And it helped me a ton just as a person, as a player, helped me grow. I think more especially as a person, you know, I from being up, growing up here and being from here and then going out to California Bay Area, it was a big change for me, really. And it helped me just grow individually. And, you know, I think that ultimately helped me on the football field as well. But being able to come back home is just something that I'm super excited. Being able to drive home to my family on Sunday dinners is something I've always dreamed of. And so I'm just grateful and excited and really just blessed.
All right, during the game, you're on the field, but let's talk about this view. This is unbelievable.
Man, I mean, I'm going to have to give it the best view in college football, really. I think you don't get any better than, you know, this. You get the Y on the mountain. You get the sometimes, I mean, especially during the season, you'll get snow up there. Like, man, no better place to play football than here. So I'm excited.
How many games did you come to growing up?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think the real question is how many cougar tails did I eat? I came to a bunch.
One per?
Yeah, maybe two. You never know. But a lot, a lot. And I remember coming to games, you know, during COVID when there was clusters of people and whatnot. And
you got in?
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. I was in there, you know, watching. And, no, it was great. But been to a few. But now I'm excited to, instead of being a fan, being a player. So I'm excited.
When did you embrace being a linebacker? Because I know you also, what, carried the ball as a running back in the day?
Yeah, I did. I think mainly in high school I played running back. That was kind of my thing, kind of just – and it really was just like, hey, let's just give Cade the ball, you know? And it was great, and I loved it. I think I kind of always just had a knack for linebacker. My dad played linebacker in college for SUU, and so my grandpa did too. So maybe it just runs in the blood. But kind of just always saw myself as a linebacker. So when I got to Cal – I actually did switch to running back for a little bit. Never played, but then ended up switching back to linebacker. So, you know, here and there. But linebacker's always been, you know, felt home to me. So,
what do you love about linebacker?
I love just being able to just be the hammer, not the nail, really. And I think just that's one thing my dad always said when I was a kid, just be the hammer, not the nail. And I think being linebacker, there's really no better position. And I think it's cool because really you're the quarterback of the defense, right? You got to know what your D-line's doing. You got to know what the secondary's doing. And so it really is – it's really – I don't think a lot of people know how mental linebacker is. And that's one thing I love about it. I love the challenge. Love being able to, you know, create havoc, you know, in the pass game and the run game. And so just the versatility I love. And I think, you know, especially being a linebacker here at BYU, there's not a lot of places that, you know, play versatile like – BYU's at linebacker, or linebackers at BYU, and so I'm just super excited to get after it.
Yeah, the Fred Warners, the Sione Takitakis, who they were kind of outside guys, became middles, which is really interesting. Where'd your grandpa play, by the way?
My grandpa played up at Utah State.
Nice.
Yeah, so we've Utah State, SUU. I know, right?
Third generation linebacker.
Yeah.
Cade Uluwabi, I love that. And then I assume Lulu's first cousin?
Yes.
On the women's volleyball team?
Second cousin. Yeah, so they go back all the way out to Hawaii and Laie area. So
many athletes in that family, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, tons. So,
was there a Cal, one of her brothers played at Cal, too? I'm trying to remember.
Yes, yes. There's another one at Cal, played O-line, another one at San Diego State.
Yeah.
So.
All big Uluwabes. D1. That's what's up. Give me a sense of the linebacking group that BYU has, because it feels like it's a very talented group.
Yeah, super talented across the board. I think all these guys are super talented, super athletic, big, strong, fast guys. And I think it's great. You know, you got guys like Isaiah Glasker, big, long guys that can run and cover space but can also rush the passer. You got guys like Ciale Serra, who's big and strong and can feel the run, can also rush the passer. And so you just have a bunch of dudes that are super versatile, and I think that just makes it even better for the defense because now the offense is like, we don't know where we're going to get, which is awesome for us. And so that just creates havoc for us and chaos. And so the linebacker group in itself is awesome. You know, off the field, like, those are my guys. Like, I've already had a strong bond with them. And then on the field, you already know that they're about to, you know, go crazy. So, but it's been great.
And how would you summarize spring ball that just ended?
It's been fun. Really, if I had to explain it in one word, it was fun. You know, I had a great experience. And that was kind of one thing I was looking for, just having a good experience. And that's what I've been getting. And so, obviously, it's been a long road of, you know, it's always difficult, you know, being the new guy and being the new transfer and learning a new system and culture. But really, like, it's been super smooth transition. So, really credit to everyone that's helped me along the way. And it's been great. And I'm just excited, once again, to keep going.
I think Kalani mentioned that, was it your grandpa or your great-grandpa was the first bishop of the first Polynesian Ward in Provo or something?
Yeah, it was my grandpa. He lived down in Provo probably 10 minutes away from here, and he passed away since, but he lived here forever. And he was the first bishop of the Polynesian Ward. And now, from what I remember, Kalani said it's three stakes.
Oh,
so God. It's blown up. So every time people are like, Uluwabi, they're like, is your grandpa Peter Uluwabi? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, he's the OG.
That's
like,
awesome.
He's the OG. So, no, it's cool. It's cool to be part of a legacy here in Provo and just can help to continue and just keep going. So it's been great.
That's sweet. Congrats on being the first, I think, viewer of the show turned interviewee, maybe? Yeah. Maybe there have been others. I don't know. Yeah. But you might be the first. I don't know. Cade, welcome to BYU, and great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Go Cougs.
What a great fit. I think the history, obviously, in the family with Provo and Grandpa being the first bishop to second cousin playing on the volleyball team and all the connections. Great to have him here. What kind of year do you expect from him?
You know, you're talking to a young man there. He knows who he is. He knows his skill set. He's really good, and we watched some of the video clips in there when he was at Cal. He's exactly what BYU needs, having lost Jack Kelly. So if he stays healthy, he can have a Jack Kelly kind of year. Only it'd be a Cade kind of year because it's his year. It certainly takes off some pressure on a new defensive coordinator to have guys like that out trying to execute. But I'm just impressed listening to him.
Yeah, he's an inside linebacker, traditionally a middle linebacker. So different position than Jack, but I think he'll be super productive. I'm expecting him to be a captain. I think he comes, transfers in. He's one of the leaders. I think he'll be one of the four or five captains for BYU. And give me 100 tackles. I think he's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, it'll be fun to watch. If you'd like to see more coverage of our BYU football efforts from spring practice, make sure to subscribe to the BYU Sports Nation YouTube channel. You'll find interviews with Bear Bachmeyer, LJ Martin, Keanu Tanavasa, and many more.
We got a bunch on Friday. We'll give those to you on the show, and you can always watch them on YouTube. Still to come, A.J. DeBonta receives a Player of the Year award. Jane Hengren sets another NCAA record. And one BYU head coach passed their mentor in career wins. Headlines are next. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to a Monday edition of BYU Sports Nation. In Studio B, I'm Jeremy Jordan alongside Dave McCann. Let's get to today's headline, sponsored by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
A.J. DeBonta, always in the news. He's in the news again today.
I heard he's coming back.
Oh, named the Julius Erving Small Forward of the Year in college basketball. First Cougar to win any of the Naismith starting five distinctions. Up for the John R. Wooden Award on Friday in L.A. As a freshman, A.J. led the country in scoring with 25.5 points per game.
That's amazing. Congratulations from one freshman phenom to another. Jane Hengren set another NCAA record over the weekend, this time in the 10,000, the Stanford Invitational on Friday. Her time of 30:46.80 beat the previous record by nearly 4 seconds and is the second NCAA record Hengren has set this track season, along with the indoor 5K. She is unbelievable.
Other notable track and field performances from the weekend, and they all run fast. On the women's side, Taylor Lovell ran third fastest outdoor 5K in program history. Carmen Alder ran the fourth fastest 1500 meter in program history. And Leah Katoa moved up to number four all time at BYU in the hammer throw. On the men's side, Isaac Hengren ran the seventh fastest 5K in program history, and Carter Cutting won the 1,500 meters.
Feels like every week we have multiple top 10 people. The record-setting era right now, BYU in track and field and cross country, so fun. Yeah. Number 10 men's volleyball beat Vanguard. They also invested with them in three sets for the second consecutive night on Friday to improve their record to 19-8 overall, 6-4 in the MPSF. With the win, head coach Sean Olmstead passes his mentor and the great Carl McGowan for most career NCAA wins at BYU in men's volleyball with 206. Congratulations to Sean. That's a notable.
I got my volleyball shirt on today.
Heck yeah, dude.
As an honor to the coach.
Up next, BYU hosts USC Friday and Saturday. Some big matches coming up.
Place will be rocking for sure. Baseball won game two before dropping game three at Baylor over the weekend in Waco. So the Bears take the series 2-1. Cougars now 14-16 overall, 5-7 in the Big 12. Play at UVU tomorrow night.
Softball was swept by number 2 Texas Tech in Lubbock over the weekend. They're really good. Cougars 11-25 overall, 2-10 in the league. BYU looks to bounce back in the win column tomorrow night against Utah Valley at Miller Park.
Number 32 women's tennis. Their 7-match win streak snapped on Saturday at number 22 TCU. BYU's record on the season now 18-5. They're 7-4 in the Big 12.
Number 67 men's tennis, because we do that with the rankings here.
Yes, we do.
On the road at number 9 Baylor on Saturday. BYU 13, they lost, BYU did. BYU 13-7 overall, 1-5 in the league. 4 of their 5 conference losses are to top 20 teams in the country. Good men's tennis in this league.
Baseball news, Justin Sterner pits 1 1/3 innings for the A's in a 12-10 win over the Astros yesterday. Daniel Schneemann recorded his 4th double of the season, taking advantage of Cubs pitching, tied for 4th among the MLB players. And Jackson Clough hit a walk-off two-run home run for the Syracuse Mets in AAA. He's hitting 261 so far this season.
Let's get Jackson up to the bigs. Let's go. And Royal beat Navy 29-22, not only in Kalani Sitake's wardrobe, but also at LaBelle Edwards Stadium in the BYU football alumni game. Friday night, quarterback John Walsh threw for 129 yards and a touchdown for Team Royal in the win. We'll show you the top five plays from the alumni game a little bit later on in the program. After the break, BYU TV basketball analyst Jonathan Tavernari joins the show to preview transfer portal season for Cougar Hoops. Which positions need to be addressed? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
They're becoming a place where top 10 guys want to come.
Elevates it, throws it down. A.J. DiBazza.
So there will be room to go out and find shooters and find bench production.
BYU has some real talent. When you combine those two, something special happens. And we hope special things happen with the portal with BYU. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. Jeremy joined alongside Dave McCann. We now bring in a guy who did not dance with the transfer portal because it didn't exist, but he didn't transfer either. Jonathan Tavernari now joins us, who is a four-year guy at BYU. That's a rare thing now to say, JT. Welcome back to the show, and welcome to transfer portal season.
Well, listen, we're just grateful that you and Dave are still here, because if the transfer portal was around my day, you both had been my agent, and our story would have been much different, guys. So,
hey, if I'm getting Robert AJ money, maybe I'm out too. We'll see. Let's talk about what BYU men's basketball, what do you expect with the portal in terms of kind of in and out and numbers, and what are you expecting?
Size. I would say the number one thing that I expect is size, right? Love Keba. Right. Keba is a freakish athlete, and Keba was good for about, 60-70% of the season after a phenomenal junior year. But you look at Arizona, you look at Michigan, and you look at some of these teams that are making a run in the NCAA tournament. And what do you see? You see a team making, with a big man that's able to. Saw an interesting stat of how the coach for Michigan, Dusty May, said, told his point guard, hey, just go finish at the rim, and he's going to be there to clean up. And then the point guard of Thorsten said, I'm not 2 for 14. Half of those I was lobbing off the backboard for him to go rebound. And so I would say that my expectations for BYU to go very tall in the portal so that they can get at least 1 7-footer and see what's available there.
Well, JT, as we look at the BYU roster that just went through the season, there were only a couple of seniors on there. That means there's a lot of movement either that's going to happen or the whole team's going to stay. So what do you expect with that group?
I was a little bit critical of the team as of late. And I think it's because their production and their effort just wasn't there. And I got to be honest, I don't know if I look to bring everybody else back, and I mean, do I bring... Dawson can potentially have a year back. You absolutely bring him. He understands BYU. He's been there. He's a culture guy. Alexei Kostic, I put him kind of a little bit on the wall, on the fence. Do you build upon him and, some of the success he had as of late? But what about the overall body of work? I don't know if I bring Beto back, right? We expected him to come in and be a really big guy. And, in terms of presence, although he was about 6'10", 6'11", we just didn't see that production. And so it's an interesting thing, especially in this day and age where you're paying players and players are not performing. And, you don't have, Jeremy, to your point of when you started the segment, JT was a four-year guy at BYU. It was different in my time where someone had a scholarship. You pretty much had a scholarship for 4 years. Nowadays, it doesn't work like that. And so obviously then you have to look at Brody Kozlowski, and he hasn't had a chance to play. And so, they'll most likely take a chance. So I'm not going to take a chance, but they're going to have him back. And so it's a difficult situation for this coaching staff, right? Because in college basketball, to be able to be successful, you have to have some type of continuity. But when you have a season where you were very much top heavy, and then injuries happened and you weren't able to deliver, a lot of questions have to be asked about the players and their performance last year. And so I'll go out on a limb here and say that half of the players that can come back, I don't know if they will.
I agree with you. I think that half the roster will be turned over. BYU's already lost 5 of the 17, that were rostered with seniors. You are gaining three players, a McDonald's All-American, a Burger Boy, as you mentioned, Brooks Bar of Mission, Dean Rickard, and then you're going to probably bring back Dawson, Nate, Brody, guys that got hurt that you want to be in there. And so the portal giveth and it taketh away. What else besides a big does BYU need? Because we heard, obviously, everyone wants shooters. How many shooters? As Kevin Young said, they are the holy grail.
I would say if you have two shooters, you would be set, right? And I look
only
at this,
two?
You know, from... So I feel like Dean Rucker can be a shooter. I've seen him play. I've seen him up and close. I think that Dean Rucker can be a type of guy that, you know, a lot of the shots that some of these guys were, you know, not only missing, but not even looking to shoot. I mean, Jeremy, how many times we were in a green room in the back, and I was like, can someone at least look at the basket to shoot? Can someone at least try to like, hey, I'm going to take the shots, right? And so I would say if you have a designated sniper, and I'm, you know, for recent bias, if you have one Travenel and then another one in waiting, you know, that comes off the bench, I think that's what you have to do. And then because you can complement with Brody Kozlowski, you can complement with Dean Rickard, Dawson was very much becoming a shooter, right? And I think he has the capability. And so if you go to the porter and you say, hey, I'm looking for a sniper and for a backup shooter, I think that's what you're going. So my things from the portal guys, the top three things I would say is size, shooting, and athleticism. Those would be the three things I say, right? Because look at Michigan, right? I mean, you know, I saw an interesting stat where most of the guys starting for Michigan now, they started at mid-majors. They started at, you know, UAB and some of these other places. And so, you know, with Kevin Young, like, the staff is really good. Let's call a spade. Kevin Young is very, very good at what he does. Will Voice is a world-class guy. Tim Fanning was going to forget more about basketball than most of us are ever going to learn. John Linehan is incredible. Chris Burgess is as good as he comes in college basketball. And so, like, you have a staff that's incredible. You have world-class people that is the supporting staff in the weight room, in the weight room, and in the training room. And so, to me, you have some of these guys, right? Robert Wright III said if he comes back to college, he's going to be at BYU. So you surround him with size, with shooters. Bruce Branch is going to be very much a slasher. I kind of picture him as a Paul George type of player. And so those are my things. You get size, you get shooting, and you get athleticism. You know, what we saw from Dominique Diamande at the end, had Dominique done that the entire year, he would be a shoe-in for me to say, oh my gosh, start him as a small forward and bring Dean off the bench, right? But, you know, the difference between good and great is consistency, and we just didn't see consistency from a lot of these guys from this past year.
It's an extra challenge when you're putting a roster together like this when you're looking for shooters, because they were looking last year and they went and found some. And we've been at practice, and in practice, Maras and Kosic and the others, they're pretty good. But in games, they just couldn't do it consistently enough. And so that runs the risk. And you're back out looking for shooters who, when the red light's on, can still shoot. And that's where, you know, if they're homegrown kids, you know as they come up that that's what they're going to do. Here, as they found last year, there's no given in that portal for shooters.
And Dave, that is such a good point. And what I would say is it's what makes me say Postage should be back. And here's why. I was a freshman. I was an incoming freshman. I shot everything that came my way, even when I got in trouble. Alexei was playing against pros in Europe. It's not like Alexei was playing, you know, Division III basketball in the middle of nowhere. He was playing at a league that is considered a very solid league, a league in Europe. And he wasn't just playing. He was getting 20-plus minutes a game. And so to me, to see him not translate that aggressiveness, the way that we saw seeing tape and now seeing full games, that was a little bit daunting for me. Now, to your point, right, 1 year under his wings, the lights are going to be a little bit less bright. Mike Rose used to say something to me when I was a freshman, and he would say, JT, when the lights come on and the popcorn is popping and the soda fountain is turned on and the tickets are sold, people become a different player. And so this is where I would kind of say, you know, bring Alexei back, because Kostic has had a year under his wings. He knows what's like playing alongside Robert Wright. He knows what's like playing alongside a McDonald's All-American. he has that experience in him. So if the staff can make sure that that experience doesn't go to a different staff, to a different team, I think it's all in, right? And to your point, Dave, you know, maybe he's the guy that it's the secondary shooter. And, you know, you go and get a deadly sniper that will play 25 minutes a game. And so it's not for the faint of heart, because now you're not planning. Like, I remember when we were recruiting Noah Hartsock and we were recruiting, different guys from and Tyler Hawes, right? People were looking at even Justin Hamilton out of Lone Peak, and coach opted for Noah Hartsock over Justin, you know, although Justin was a little bit younger, because he had Noah coming on the pipe, because he had Brendan Davies coming on the pipe. And so you can't, back then you could plan for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years because of the 2-year LDS mission. Nowadays, to you guys' point, it's a year, you know, it's a year over year turnover. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
I heard that if we all sing Edelweiss outside the Merit Center, Alexei will commit to come back next year. Are you down?
I practiced for once or twice, and then I'm sure that I'm going to sound like, you know, a world famous opera singer out of Austria. And I think that's gonna do the trick for him.
Yeah, rehearsal is at 1, just so you know. Arizona goes down big against Michigan. Michigan looks amazing. They made Arizona look like a JV team, which is crazy. What was your reaction to how that game went down? Because I was shocked.
Oh, I was very much shocked. And, you know, like, to your point, I think that's the perfect comment. They made Arizona look pedestrian, right? And it was something, because Arizona has been this juggernaut, right? I mean, me and shout out to our producer for the, you know, the pregame show and the postgame wrap up, Hema. Him and I were, you know, on the tunnel behind the hoop and going like, my gosh, could they beat an NBA team tonight? Right? And Arizona looked like an unstoppable force, but I think that's where Michigan is really making me say size and athleticism and shooting, because Michigan is a well-oiled machine. Michigan plays hard. Michigan doesn't take any possessions off. They're big. When their big guy, Mara, when he came down for a little bit and he was out of the lineup for a couple of minutes, the game changed. Arizona was able to tie in the game from like 28-13 to like 28-21. And then number 23 kid with the black and white Jordans came back, I don't know how to pronounce his name, came back in, made a bunch of shots, although being hurt. And so toughness, athleticism, size, and shooting, man, you know, if you guys had been my agent and the transfer portal were around, we would have made a good amount of money, guys. I'm not going to lie.
Yaxel Lendenborg in Michigan going for the Natty against UConn tonight. Not sure who BYU fans are going for, given that BYU played UConn. Would that be better if BYU played them tight and they win the Natty? We shall see, but college basketball coming to a close. Transfer portal opens, and JT, we appreciate you dropping some knowledge, man.
And I'm going to be cheering for UConn. Michigan is probably going to win by 20. I'm cheering for UConn because Dan Hurley is crazy, and I love it.
I would put my forehead right next to yours if you were right here. JT, we appreciate it, man.
See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Jonathan Devereaux.
If you missed any of our interviews, shows, or deep blues, you can find them at BYUSN.com or download the BYU TV app and get all the BYU Sports Nation content on demand.
Coming up next, we'll count down the top 5 plays from the BYU football alumni flag football game. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory.
We had a fun time in LaBelle Edwards Stadium on Friday with the alumni game. Jeremy Jordan alongside Dave McCann. So let's show you the top 5 plays from the 5th annual BYU football alumni flag football game.
Let's go right to John Walsh back in the stadium for the first time since 94. Yeah, he was the guy who succeeded Ty Detmer. Here he is throwing a touchdown to Aleva Hifo. Nice job, and welcome back. He was thrilled to be back in the stadium.
Through the window. By the way, Diane Gonwoluku wasn't on any rosters. They just gave him a jersey. Hey, just play.
Get in
there.
You're
in shape. Number 4, Ben Bywater, one of the younger players in the game, had a pick in the end zone. This is at the very end. They get this. That was worth 2 points. And it gave Navy a chance. That was a big play.
How about Kai Nakua back in the stadium? I remember that pick 6 against Boise State.
Unbelievable.
That stadium was as loud as I ever remember it. Here he gets a pick. And so Nakua making another play.
Number two, Dax Milne, long touchdown catch, 47 yards for Milne. That was awesome.
And Mitch Matthews with the catch of the day over Tim McTyer, showing that he never gets old. There's the Milne touchdown. Matthews, here it is right here, and that's just what he does.
Our question of the day, how are you feeling about BYU football after spring practices compared to how you felt before? A Elite Voice of the Day is presented by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory. At Big 12 Conference, biggest concerns are RB and wide receiver depth. Rise and shout out to Sean Olmstead, record-breaking performance over the weekend.